Thank you very much. This court is convened today for a joyous purpose, to remember and celebrate the life of a remarkable man, a pioneering Alaska judge, a colleague, a mentor and friend, a husband and father, a community leader, the late Justice Robert Boutchever. I'll refer to him most of the time as Justice Boutchever because that's a sign of the Alaska Supreme Court claiming its own. He went on, obviously, to be Judge Boutchever of the Ninth Circuit, but please forgive my provincialism. Our speakers today will touch upon the themes I just mentioned and others, but before I call upon them, I'd like to emphasize a bit of history. Robert Boutchever was the ninth justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, its fourth chief justice, and the first Alaskan ever to sit on the federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. He was, in the words of a newspaper headline of the story of his passing last year, a Renaissance man. After an academic career at Cornell University, both undergraduate and law, and service in the Army in World War II, he heard of an opening in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the distant territory of Alaska. Bob Bartlett, then Alaska's delegate to Congress and later senator, recommended him for the position, and he received the appointment. Let me tell the story of his coming to Alaska in his own words from an interview of Judge Boutchever by Judge Tom Stewart. Quote, "I had to do a little talking to convince my wife that we and our small child should head off to what was then the wilds of Alaska, about which we knew practically nothing. Connie was nice enough to say that she would go up and see what it was like and give it a try. On my daughter Barbara's first birthday, January 16, 1946, I flew to Alaska. Connie stayed behind while I was to find a place to live. Coming to Alaska, I flew up in a DC-3. Juno was socked in with a heavy snowstorm, and we flew through the White Pass, which was appropriately named. Couldn't see a thing. If I knew what the conditions were at the time, I'd have been really frightened. We made it through the pass and landed at Whitehorse, where it was about 30 degrees below zero. The next day we worked our way back down to Juneau. That was my arrival. Well, once settled in Juneau, he wasted no time in making an impression. He joined the law firm of Faulkner and Banfield, eventually becoming managing partner. His later partner, Mike Holmes, would say of him, he was considered the best trial lawyer in Alaska. He served as president of the Juneau Bar Association and as president of the Alaska Bar Association. He became the first chairman of the Juneau Planning Commission, which he served for many years. He was a leader in the fight to keep the capital in Juneau, traveling the state in that successful campaign. He was active in securing the southeast branch of the University of Alaska. In these and in other ways, he was a rock in this small community. Along the way, he and Connie had three more daughters, four in all. And then in 1972, Governor Egan appointed him to the Alaska Supreme Court to succeed Justice Diamond. He was elected Chief Justice by his colleagues in 1975, and in 1980, President Carter appointed him to the Ninth Circuit, the first Alaskan ever to sit on that tribunal, one step below the United States Supreme Court. I hope that in the next hour or so, this bare outline of Bob Boutchever's life, and especially the parts of it devoted to the state of Alaska and the city of Juneau, will be brought to life in all its many facets. Before we hear from our speakers today, I'd like to note, and I'm embarrassed to say I am not sure who of these folks who we thought might be in attendance are actually here, but I would like to acknowledge the presence of those among them who made it, the first governor, former governor Bill Sheffield, and if Governor Sheffield did not make it, is Governor Sheffield in the room?
He's on his way.
He's on his way. Thank you. And I'm told that our legislative delegation is attempting to be here or is here, and again, I'm not sure I can see everybody in the room, but Senator Dennis Egan, Representative Beth Gertula, and Representative Kathy Munoz. I do know, because I can see him, that Deputy Chief of Staff Randy Ruero, representing Governor Parnell, is here. Welcome, Randy. We begin our remarks at this time, then, with those by Hannah Siebold of Juneau, who is the president of the Alaska Bar Association.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for coming to honor Judge Boutchever's many contributions to the judiciary and to our state as a whole. It was my honor to be asked to briefly say a few words on behalf of the Alaska Bar Association about the contributions he made to Alaska law and therefore to Alaskans themselves. Much is known and will be said today about Judge Boutchever's legal background and contributions to the legal community. He was an assistant U.S. attorney here in Juneau from 1946 to 1947, thereafter joining Faulkner, Banfield, Boutchever, and Dugan for 25 years. Before joining the bench, he served as the president of both the Alaska Bar Association and Juneau Bar Association, as Justice Carpinetti had said. But what struck me in looking into Judge Boutchever's history is the impact his contributions have had on the quality of life that we've enjoyed here today, well beyond the walls of our courthouses or our law offices. What impressed me is how generously he shaped the Juneau community and Alaska itself in the later days of the territory and the early days of statehood. For example, Judge Boutchever was the chairman of the Juneau chapter of American Red Cross from 1949 to 51, a member of the Site Selection Committee of the University of Alaska Southeast, and a commissioner on the Juneau Planning Commission from 1956 to 61. He was president of the Juneau Chamber of Commerce from 1952 to 54, and president of the Juneau Rotary Club from 1966 to 67. He even helped establish Eagle Crest Ski Area, inspired several generations of downhill skiers. All of this happened before Judge Boutchever ever became a justice of the Alaska Supreme Court or Alaska's Chief Justice or the first Alaskan to serve on the U.S. Ninth Circuit of the Court of Appeals. It happened before he became known as a legal legend with a long history and record of protecting the individual rights and liberties. What a remarkable life and a remarkable legacy. At the Alaska Bar Convention and Judicial Conference this past May in Anchorage, the Alaska Bar Association unanimously passed a resolution to name a floor of the Juneau Federal Building after Judge Boutchever in recognition of his contribution to our state and our nation. We are proud of his many achievements and his lasting impact of the work that he had for the people of Alaska. Please also join me in thanking his family for sharing him with our community and state and for letting us reap the benefits of his insight, wisdom, and kindness. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Before I call on our next speaker, I'd like to recognize that Governor Sheffield is with us, and I only wish that every time I said something like that, that it came true in the next 30 seconds. I had just previously said that we had hoped that you would be here, Governor. Welcome, and thank you for being here. Next, it's my pleasure to call upon Eric Vang, who is the president of the Juneau Bar Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors.
Welcome, everyone. On behalf of the Juneau Bar Association, I would like to thank you all for attending. We have been and remain a tightly knit legal community, and we greatly appreciate this opportunity to remember a man whose legacy is a foundation of our legal community, both as a jurist and as a peer. I would particularly like to extend my thanks on behalf of a younger generation of lawyers in this community, because while we do not share the privilege of your memories, we too must know and understand the legacy of Judge Boutchever. Our thanks for this opportunity, and thank you again.
Thank you, Eric. Next, we get to hear from Justice Boutchever's colleague and successors on the Supreme Court. The first I'd like to call is our current Chief Justice, Dana Fabe, who graciously insisted that I sit in this chair as the Juneau Justice, but who is our Chief Justice. And she begins this segment with her reflections on a generous jurist. Chief Justice.
Thank you. Well, when I came to Alaska to clerk for the Alaska Supreme Court in 1976, 36 years ago, Bob Boutchever was serving as the Chief Justice. And Chief Justice Boutchever was always so gracious and incredibly kind to all of the law clerks of the Alaska Supreme Court, not just his own clerks here in Juneau, who my year were Walter Scher and Liz Werby, but also all of the clerks in Fairbanks and in Anchorage when he would come to travel to those court locations for oral argument. And he would take the time to get to know us, with me, he always talked about Cornell since I was an undergraduate there and would compare the winters and ask me if I didn't think that Alaska's winters were actually milder than those in Ithaca. And he would get to know a little bit about each of the clerks and take some time each time he came to Anchorage to touch base with us. But I have such a clear memory of one time when Chief Justice Boutchever was in Anchorage for oral arguments, and my dad, who lived in Cincinnati, and which is where I grew up and still lives in Cincinnati, was up here to visit me that summer of 1977, near the end of my clerkship. And my dad came to the courthouse to meet me, and we were in the lobby. We were finished. I had finished giving him the tour, and he was getting ready to go down in the elevator, and Chief Justice Boutchever came across the lobby stopped and came up to me. I was, 25 years old. I would have been too shy to introduce my dad, but he came up to us and said, "Oh, is this your dad, Dana?" And I said, "Yeah." And he introduced himself and shook my dad's hand and told my dad that I had been doing a very good job for the Alaska Supreme Court. And it only took a moment, but it was just such a generous gesture. And I remember, I really have such a clear memory that my dad, who is an incredibly perceptive judge of character, was then and still is, turned to me and said, "That was awfully nice of him. He didn't need to do that." And I just will always remember that Chief Justice Boutchever was such a generous justice who was always kind to all of the Alaska Supreme Court's law clerks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Justice. Justice Daniel Winfrey will now share his thoughts on one of Justice Boutchever's most important and lasting opinions, an important contribution to fairness and access to the courts in Alaska law, pardon me, in remarks entitled "A Gift to Our History." Justice Winfrey.
Thank you, Justice Carbonetti. When Justice Boutchever was appointed to the Alaska Supreme Court in 1972, I was 1 year out of Lathrop High School in Fairbanks, making my way slowly, as my mother would say, through college. When he became Chief Justice, I was a teamster in the pipeline camps and in Prudhoe Bay. When he was appointed to the Ninth Circuit in 1980, I was still a law student. I never had the privilege to know him or meet him or work with him. And from what I can tell, the only things that he and I have in common the primary thing that we have in common is that we both arrived in the territory of Alaska. He apparently by DC-3 over White Pass and me by Stork in Fairbanks. But from his many years on the bench writing eloquent opinions about the laws that bind us today in Alaska, I feel that in some small way I've come to know him. Because the wonderful thing about appellate judges is that their voices and wisdom live on. Today I chair the Alaska Supreme Court's Access to Civil Justice Committee, which works to reduce barriers to justice delivery across our very large state. There may be no decision from our court's earlier history more important to access to justice than the Agachak versus Montgomery Ward case, written by then Justice Boutchever in 1974. The Agachaks lived in the village of Scammon Bay, 500 miles from Anchorage. They owned a 16-by-12 home, a snow machine, and a freezer. Their annual income was less than $6,000. When they were sued in small claims court at Anchorage, they received a summons stating that failure to appear would result in a default judgment against them. The round-trip fare to Anchorage at the time was $186, 1974, and an overnight in Bethel was required. In the court's decision, Justice Boutchever wrote that the small claims summons denied due process because it failed to give the Agachaks notice of their right to respond in writing to the claims against them as opposed to appearing personally. They didn't have to appear in person. This principle seems so basic today, but Agachak was a milestone decision that set the baseline for what fairness requires in a place as culturally and geographically diverse as our great state of Alaska. Thanks to Justice Boutchever's clear language and skilled analysis, the decision resonates as clearly and as compellingly today as it did then. And as the Alaska court system continues to work towards a justice system that is fair to everybody all across our state, accessible to everyone across our state, His words in that case and many others are there to guide us and inspire us, and for this we can all be very grateful. I would also like to mention Justice Boutchever's remarkable place in Alaska history. As a member of the Alaska Bar Association Historians Committee, I'm involved in efforts to preserve and honor the early members of our bar, the profession, and the and judiciary. I believe that we learned so much from history and from the people who came before us and blazed the trails that we follow. But a lot of history gets lost. What survives too often gets pushed aside in the rush of the modern world. So when someone like Justice Boutchever comes along with his long, tireless record, contribution, and achievement in our state, it's not only important that we honor him, it's imperative. He was the 9th Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. He served as Chief Justice from 1975 to 1978, and that's no small thing. All Alaskans should understand and celebrate what he did for us, and I'm very honored today to help pay tribute for a man that I never had the chance to meet. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Winfrey. Now it's my pleasure to call upon my colleague, Senior Justice Warren Matthews, who served on this court for over 32 years before his retirement and continues to serve on a pro tem basis, a really remarkable record. Justice Matthews had the privilege to serve with Justice Boutchever over a period between 1977 and 1980, and he's going to talk with us today about his friend and colleague, Justice Matthews.
About 3 days after I was appointed to the Supreme Court by Governor Hammond, I got a call from Chief Justice Boutchever. And first, he congratulated me. I thought it was maybe a little perfunctory. And then he said, "How soon can you come to work?" And I started to ruminate about how there aren't many clean breaks in one's professional life, and I take maybe 6 weeks to close my practice, and then I wanted to take a nice vacation too, so maybe 90 days. And he said, "Warren, that would be totally unreasonable." And I had to reflect, you know, I'd always treasured my independence as a lawyer, but somehow after following that path, I seem to have acquired a boss and a demanding one at that. But there was a reason, too. When I joined the court was in crisis. This was construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline was just winding up, and there was a population boom because of the construction and the anticipation of the revenues, and when I came on the court, in order to keep up, why the five justices had to produce about just right around 50 opinions per justice per year to avoid falling behind, whereas 3 or 4 years before, the rate was more like 20 or 25, or in some cases even less than that. So they were overwhelmed, and Bob explained to me that there was a morale problem on the court by reason of the crushing caseload, and that I would simply have to do better. And he proved to be very persuasive. By the end of the month, I heard my first oral argument in a case called Erickson against State. But anyway, that's one aspect of Bob. Bob was very serious about work when would respond to a crisis. And one of his responses to a crisis was to start the initiative that created the Alaska Court of Appeals, which then relieved the Supreme Court of its criminal caseload virtually. And that was finally completed just about the time that Bob was appointed to the Ninth Circuit. But he had a big part in it. And there were other sides to Bob, too. He had a great sense of humor. He was an irrepressible punster. I remember in Fairbanks once, a criminal case, rape case, and one of the attorneys made the mistake of referring to one of the important Supreme Court of the United States cases that he thought controlled the issue and referred to it as the seminal case. And I just, in a flash, I thought, this is an opportunity that should not be taken. But Bob took it, and he said, no, 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 this is the seminal case. I enjoyed serving with Bob, and he cared about the law, and he cared about its effects on people and its effects on our democracy. He brought large talents to it. He was very analytical and disciplined, and a very fast and effective writer. His opinions get right to the point, often with an opening sentence that serves as kind of a hook. I was reviewing a couple yesterday. I'll give a couple of examples. One is, quote, this is a dispute between two stubborn Matanuska Valley farmers. You can imagine what follows. Another, this appeal arises because A, I'll maintain his privacy, A conveyed the same 5-acre parcel twice, first to B and later to C. And how is this for a hook in a dry workers' compensation case? The bizarre murder of X gave rise to this appeal concerning the statutory presumption of compensability. And one that I like, which is apropos of a case that I'm serving on now, pro tem, for the third time, we are confronted with a challenge to the reapportionment of the Alaska legislature. Part of Bob's concern about people was reflected. One of his themes was that he thought that the sentences that were being meted out to drug addicts just for possession were barbaric. And if you go through, we were doing lots of sentence appeals in those days. And if you go through the opinions, both that he wrote and those that he participated on, well, you can see that theme recurring over and over again. He told me often that he thought in 100 years or so why people would look back on our treatment of addicts and just about the same way we look back on the treatment of heretics in Salem, Massachusetts. He thought it was profoundly wrong. Another thing that he was very concerned with is he wanted to give life to the newly enacted constitutional right of privacy. And what I think is his signature case in his time on the Alaska Supreme Court is a case called Glass against the state. And Glass involved the question whether the police could secretly tape record with secret police agents statements of people, just for casual conversations of people, without a warrant. And the Glass held that that could not be done. There was an argument, and it's been persuasive to lots of courts, that, well, why can't you record since the false friend could testify in court as to what was said, why not just get it accurate and use the tape recorder? And if I may, I'll read Bob's answer to it. I thought it shows not only his writing felicity, but his values too. So I'll read it, or part of it anyway. Here's what he wrote. In answer to the question I just put, all one needs to refute that statement is to ask the question of oneself, would it make a substantial difference to the speaker to assume the risk not only that one's confidence would be betrayed by oral recollections, but also the risk that one's remarks would be secretly recorded or broadcast? certainly many of the casual, the caustic, the irreverent remarks would be inhibited, as would criticism of individuals and policies. The individual, the employee could not with impunity point to the shortcomings in his superiors or in the functions of his office. Families could not freely discuss the foibles of others. Clever prodding may elicit thoughtless comments about sex, religion, politics, acquaintances, personal finances, and even one's innermost thoughts. And then I'll skip ahead a bit. One's ill-considered remarks are not thereby preserved for posterity on the reels of magnetic tape, nor insulated from the faded memories inherent in the passage of time. Faced with the choice of silence or the risk that comments will be etched in stone, a speaker may choose the former alternative to the manifest diminution of the spontaneity which marks our daily discourse. Now, I think it's not only good writing, but his values do come through that very nicely. So, as I've indicated, and others will indicate, Bob was professionally very disciplined and personally very fastidious and always presented himself well. And I wondered if there was a flip side until I took a trip with him on his boat. We were going fishing to, I guess, a favorite stream of his on Admiralty Island. And so I came down to the harbor and got into his boat. And it really looked like the boat that I kept but seldom used at Homer, that it had the grime of a boat that hadn't been used all season, had gas cans strewn all over the deck, and the upholstery was torn, the mooring ropes were frayed. But anyway, I went anyway. We motored across to Admiralty Island and up a bay and anchored in a stream and spent a nice couple of hours fishing up the stream. When I came back, the bay had an entirely different aspect. It was just a mud flat going a mile out. The tide had gone out, of course. The boat was still in the bottom of a small stream, but it wasn't really enough to float the boat, or certainly not to operate the motor. And so what ensued was a scene that was very much like something out of The African Queen. I found myself tugging on the rope in front of the boat. Bob was up in the bow giving instructions. He said a couple times, "Warren, I do it myself, but you have the chest waiters." So after about an hour, we got to navigable water, and by then it was dark, and that wasn't the end of the story, though, because about halfway across toward Douglas Island, where we ran out of gas, I found myself shaking the various gas cans and consolidating the little gas, the dribs and drabs, and putting it in the main tank. I remember asking him, "Well, is this gas properly mixed?" And he said, "Oh, I don't know." But anyway, we finally motored around, I guess it must have been the south end of Douglas Island, when we finally completely ran out of gas and anchored the boat on the beach and walked up in the dark until Bob figured there was a road up in the trees, and sure, and there was. And so we were able to call for a ride, and it was otherwise uneventful. The next day, Bob was well scrubbed and prepared and ready for court, and there was never any mention of our adventure. Well, I liked working with Bob. He was really a great guy, and I respected his work and his values. I did always feel a sense of pride when I was able to step into court with him. And even now, when I reflect on the 3 years that we overlapped on the Supreme Court of Alaska, I feel privileged and honored to have been able to work with him. Thank you.
I'm debating whether I should say this, so I will go ahead and say it. It's really interesting and wonderful what one learns at events like this from a historical perspective. The relationship that Justice Matthews had with then Chief Justice Boochiever was the same that I had as a new justice with Chief Justice Matthews. But as an indication of how much times had changed, when I was appointed, I immediately went in and sat down with Larry Weeks, my presiding judge. I was a sitting trial judge. We looked over the calendar, figured out which cases he could take, which ones I had to finish up. I had a 10-day trip with celebrating my dad's 85th birthday on a cruise ship that the Carpinetti kids had bought for Dad. And so we figured that with everything going on, I could report in 30 days. And I got the call from Chief Justice Matthews, who said, congratulations on your appointment. And I said, thank you. I actually didn't think it was perfunctory. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And then I went through my whole rap about how many cases and how many Larry Weeks was going to take and which were going to go where. At the end, which took about 5 minutes, at the end of which Chief Justice Matthews said, boy, that's great. You'll probably want to be sworn in tomorrow. And I remember literally holding the phone out and thinking, he didn't hear a word I said. And now I know he heard all the words I said, but what was important was to get the new justice on, and I was sworn in the next day and a month later hearing cases. And I took a box full of briefs on the Caribbean cruise. So. So things don't change, they just get more compacted.
And it didn't change when I was appointed because Chief Justice Fabe had a little chat with me about how long I could have to wrap up my personal things as well. So apparently that's one continuing thread to the Alaska Supreme Court.
Well, in any event, it's my great pleasure now to call upon my colleague, Justice Craig Stowers, who served as Judge Boochiever's clerk on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And he will talk about a guide and a mentor, Justice Stowers.
Thank you, Justice Carpinetti. 2 days. I got a call right after I was appointed, and Chief Justice Carpinetti, and backed up by Justice Fabe, let me know that I couldn't keep my caseload either. I was on the Superior Court and had trials scheduled and boxed up everything and came over. Nothing does change, that's for sure. Also, I was on that fishing trip at Bowman. but it was probably about 12 years later. I had the time of my life. And just to note what a small world it is, Justice Carpinetti read to you one of the portions that I was hoping to share with you from the oral history program that Judge Tom Stewart conducted, and I would really like to make the point and echo what Justice Winfrey said. It's just so incredibly important and also incredible that we have these giants, these statesmen of Alaska law and government and history that have walked in our midst, and some people have exercised the good judgment, and we are the beneficiaries of that, to have gone and taken an oral history from some of these giants. And Judge Boochiever was one of those. This was an oral history done by Judge Tom Stewart, formerly also a member of the legislature and involved in the Constitutional Convention. This was back in 1990, and it's printed up. It's done by the Ninth Circuit Historical Society, but it's available in the law offices and also from the Ninth Circuit. And for those of you that are interested, even in the slightest, in Judge Boochiever's life and times, I just highly recommend that you go and get a copy of this and read through it. It's really quite astonishing. It will take you from his reflections on lettering in high school. Do they still do that anymore, letter in high school? I mean, he was into football and basketball and track and rugby and other sports. Tennis was very important to him throughout pretty much all of his life. And I've seen it in the year that I clerked with him, and I've heard stories both from his and his side of the story, as well as others that competed against him, that he was quite the competitor on the tennis court. Isn't that right, Justice Matthews? And it was interesting to hear them talk between themselves about who actually had performed better. First, I want to thank Lindsay Clark for the wonderful music. I've never had a more amazing seat in a concert in all of my life, and probably won't again to actually be behind the musician and read the music notes, and that was wonderful, and I thank you for that. It's hard to believe it's been 27 years since I had the privilege of being employed by Judge Boutchever, and I call him Judge Boutchever because he was Judge Boutchever then to me and always has been since. I was his law clerk along with two other clerks, one an Alaskan, Blythe Marston, and another, Neil McFeely, who was from Idaho. And the three of us came to Juneau right after law school from our various schools to work for him. And in part, we were starry-eyed, and in part, we were terrified, and in part, we just had no idea what this really was going to mean to us professionally and personally. And I've got to tell you, Judge Boutchever became to me one of the three giants and mentors in my life. And but for what he instilled in me and taught me, both directly and indirectly, along with one of my other mentors who was sitting to my right immediately, Justice Matthews, I would not be the person that I am today, and I certainly wouldn't be sitting here sharing with you my thoughts and memories and appreciation of him. This photograph that you see to the right of the courtroom is a photograph that I took as a law clerk back in October 4th of 1985. It was the occasion of another one of these memorial services for Justice John Diamond, who had recently passed away, and the court and the bar was putting on a very similar memorial service, and I was up in the chambers in the federal building on the top floor with Judge Boutchever, and we were all dressed for the occasion, because usually the law clerks didn't wear ties. I have a photograph of me sitting with him wearing a tie that day, so I know it's true. And he asked me to come into his chambers, and I went in, and he introduced me to Justice Matthews and also to Justice Rabinowitz, who had come down from Fairbanks and over from Anchorage in order to attend this ceremony. And Judge Boutchever had a wicked sense of humor, but he also cared a lot about the clerks that worked for him. And so he had talked with both of his former colleagues about the possibility of me working for one of them as a law clerk the following year. And he had not shared that with me. And so I walk in, and this is fairly early in the clerkship, and I haven't really gotten the measure of him, both in terms of his humor and also his compassion and planning. And so he started a discussion between the two of them and me, and he tried to instigate a bidding war of sorts between the two, and these two jurists fell right along in line with it, and I'm sitting here wondering what in the heck is going on. It looks like my next year is being planned before my eyes, but as it turns out, what started in humor ended up being an offer from Justice Matthews to clerk for him the following year on the Alaska Supreme Court in Anchorage, and it was just an astonishing and very life-forming opportunity. Judge Boutchever and Justice Matthews, but we're here to talk about Judge Boutchever, really was a mentor. And I think about what it means to be a mentor, and to my thinking, it means to be a teacher, to be one that is wise in the way of the world, but also wise in the way of law and of the legal process. And he was all of those things. He had a deep understanding of the law and of justice, an abiding commitment to justice that reached through everything that he did. And I saw that especially in some of the dissents, following up on something that Justice Matthews indicated. In the Ninth Circuit, the court would get appeals from death sentences that were imposed in various states in the West, Arizona being one of them. And Judge Boutchever was just adamantly against and horrified about the death penalty, and he thought it was barbaric and there was no place for it in a civilized society. And we had a case that he was in the dissent on. It ultimately went before an en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit, and I was one of the clerks that worked with him. And I just remember, apart from, the merits of the legal positions, which, of course, I can't discuss because there is a continuing obligation, and he's thinking, thank goodness, for me not to, to share confidences. But I could just see his just sense of justice and his view of that, the wrongness of that, that was there. And it was just a shining light, and it was always there. In terms of some of the things that he taught me and the other clerks, and I carried this with me, or at least I tried to, and still try to this day, things that that first I think I really learned working for him is, the benefit of being prepared and the very hard work that goes into being an appellate court judge. He would work just as hard. I would make an effort to get to chambers before him and to stay after him, just because that was my view of what a law clerk was supposed to do back then. He made it hard because he would, oftentimes be there early or stay there late or occasionally come in on the weekend. And that really stuck with me. I discussed, his view of how important the legal record is, the case file that comes up from a trial court. When I was called by a reporter from K200 shortly after he died, I didn't realize I was going to be giving an interview. I thought I was going to be asking questions, but the reporter managed to put it out there. And so I think that if you were to Google that or look into their archives, you would get some of my sense about how important those elements of the process were, and my thinking about, his teaching of that to me. In terms of being a judge, I didn't really think about ever being a judge back then. I thought I was just trying to learn as much as I could. But he really opened my mind to the process, to procedural fairness. I mean, he was concerned about discrimination back at a time when we as a society had not made nearly as many advances as we have since made, but that was something that was just really close to his heart, that was just always apparent. He was a remarkable writer, and Justice Matthews has shared some of it, and so I won't, but he was a very, very much a stickler for detail, and I would write things, and I've got to tell you, back in the day, we would write things actually the way I'm still writing things on pen and paper. We didn't have word processors, and I don't know whether he typed, but it was not his way. I think he may have occasionally dictated, but he was just a remarkable writer, and I would send him something that I had spent a long time on, and he'd send it back with corrections and suggestions for improvement. They were always right on, and I tried to, to keep that in mind in everything that I do. One of the things that I really appreciated about him, and I try to emulate myself, both when I was a Superior Court judge and now on this court, is he would have a real heart for Alaska law students who were interested in coming back home, or even law students who are graduating that were interested in making a home in Alaska. And so he would reach out and take people like me who had been here and gone outside to law school and bring me back up, or my co-clerk, Blythe Marston, or others. He just had a real heart, I think, for seeding the legal community with young lawyers who could make a difference. And to the extent that he makes a difference in my life and other young lawyers' lives, and that we're able to take that and continue to share it with the state, we walk in the shadows of giants. I hope every day of my life, as I walk into my job every morning, that I can do half the job that he did, because he was just a remarkable man. He was a remarkable lawyer. He was a remarkable jurist. And I'm proud to call him a friend. And I want to say to him today, thank you, Judge Boutchever, for giving me the opportunity, the privilege to know you and to learn from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Stowers. Now I'd like to read the following remarks from Judge Andrew Kleinfeld, Judge Boutchever's successor on the Ninth Circuit. He's unable to be here today because he's traveling out of state, but he asked that these remarks be read. He says, "When I was a young lawyer just starting out, I greatly admired the courtly gentility and profound intellect of Justice Boutchever on the Alaska Supreme Court. And later, as Judge Boutchever's colleague on the United States Court of Appeals, I grew to admire him even more. He was a model judge and a kind and thoughtful gentleman. Sincerely, Andrew J. Kleinfeld, Circuit Judge." The next item on the program are congressional tributes. And before I call upon our two speakers, I would just like to... You're right. I've skipped the photo tribute. Thank you. Barbara, can I just ask that the photo tribute begin? Thank you. Thank you to the persons who put that beautiful tribute together, and there just had to be something perfect about the accompanying music, be Let Me Call You Sweetheart, for a man that was so thoughtful and so kind. The next part of the program, as I was trying to jump to too quickly, are congressional tributes. Before I call upon our two speakers, I would just urge everyone to take a look at the insert in the programs of the Congressional Record, the remarks of Senator Begich of June 5th and Senator Murkowski of June 28th are really wonderful. Now I'd like to call upon Colleen McCowan of the office of Senator Lisa Murkowski. Ms. McCowan.
Hi, I'm Colleen McCowan with Senator Murkowski's office. The following remarks are from Senator Murkowski. I'm sorry I cannot join you in person to share my thoughts about the late Judge Robert Boutchever. Thank you for allowing Colleen to share my thoughts with you today. Last week, I placed the congressional record in a lengthy memorial, in the congressional record, a lengthy memorial statement chronicling the life of Judge Boutchever. While it is customary in such statements to focus on the man's professional career, U.S. Assistant Attorney, Exemplary Practicing Attorney, Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, and Judge of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, none of that compares to what he meant to the people of Alaska's capital city. It doesn't capture the fact that Bob Boutchever was a steadfast opponent of moving the capital. His firm belief that a great capital city should host a great state university, his vision that Auk Bay would be the perfect place to site the University of Alaska Southeast, his work in making Eagle Crest ski area a reality, his leadership of the Chamber of Commerce, the Juneau Planning Commission, the Red Cross, and the Rotary, not to mention the Juneau Bar Association. Reciting Bob Boutchever's professional career does not do justice to his spirit for life. A birdwatcher, mountaineer, pianist, and poet, a family man whose daughter would sing, "We Are the Happy Boutchevers," a partner of Connie, whose contributions to the Juneau arts community cannot be understated. To those outside Alaska, this is a place of extreme natural beauty and extreme climates. Those looking out the windows of the cruise ship today are probably wondering out loud what kind of people live here in the winter. Looking back upon the life of Judge Robert Boutchever, it is fair to say the best, the brightest, the most well-rounded, the most interesting, and the most adventurous. I am proud to join with you in celebrating the life and legacy of this outstanding Alaskan, and I'd like to present the family with the congressional record.
Thank you, Ms. McCowan, and now I'd like to call upon Sally Smith to deliver remarks on behalf of Senator Begich. Mayor Smith.
Honorable Justices, members of the family, and all of you who have come to pay tribute to Judge Boutchever, it is my honor to stand in for Senator Begich, who can't be with us today, and it is my honor to be able to present to the family. On behalf of the court system, as well as Senator Begich, the congressional record. So, Mimi, I'll just put that close. I'm not going to reiterate everything that you have heard, but I am going to maybe add that as we've listened to so much of the history of Judge Boutchever, we've not really dwelt on the fact that he was a humanitarian. Not only did he have all of these remarkable accomplishments as a jurist and a lawyer, but he had the remarkable accomplishment of a humanitarian and a family man. He always had time for those backcountry trips with his children. He had time to explore Alaska, to become a member of the Explorers Club. Go figure. That's what, New York? These are things that made him real to us, not just in the capital city and in Alaska and in the Ninth Circuit, but as a citizen of the United States, he was exemplary. And I believe he brought those humanitarian qualities with him as a jurist, not the other way around. That what made him so exemplary was his commitment to family and community and country. Out of it, we have a state that is very special. And there isn't a one of us probably in this room that hasn't been touched by his life, whether we knew him or not. We use Eagle Crest, we go to the university, we're out there on those boats reliving some of the same experiences. But through his work on the comprehensive plan and through his work in this community and this state, we are all touched by what he has given us, and it will continue on through the generations. Our condolences go out to the family and friends, but as Senator Begich would also say, our gratitude goes out to the man who has made our lives better by passing this way, being among us, and sharing his many gifts. Thank you all.
Thank you. And now I'd like to call on Bill Ruddy, a partner at the Robertson Monagle firm for many years, as he remembers his good friend.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, the Boutchever family, counsel, friends. Your Honor, I would call to your attention that there are perhaps many people out there that should be recognized, but I see Ann Boutchever sitting next to my wife, who has been...
Ann Rabinowitz.
Excuse me, Ann Rabinowitz, who has been the widow of and wife of Justice Rabinowitz for many, many years. Justice Rabinowitz, who has done so much for our court. When Bob Boutchever came to Juneau over 70 years ago, approximately, and he brought something, an additional dimension, to the practice of law in Juneau. He was, as far as I can see, the first attorney to have been formally trained, having received his degree in law at Cornell. You look back at the great lawyers, and there were great lawyers in a good bar association. Bert Faulkner, Bob Robertson, I'm not sure those fellows even had a college degree. Norman Banfield, Fred Eastaugh, these are good lawyers. I was well trained by Fred Eastaugh over the years and have much to be thankful for. I met Bob about 50 years ago at a bar luncheon. He was seated across the table from me. And when he heard that I was a Yale graduate, he sort of leaned back in his chair, big smile on his face, his eyes flashed, and he said, "I had my leg broken in the Yale Bowl in 1936 by Larry Kelly, an All-American. Did you know him?" Well, he said, sure. Everybody knew him. He was the guy that broke Bob Boutchever's leg in that joke. I didn't say that, but I did know the name. And he went on to say that I was playing left halfback, and I took the ball from the quarterback, ran down the scrimmage, and turned left to cross over at the end. When I got blasted by this guy, Kelly, he put me out for the rest of the season and broke my leg. He said we were a nationally recognized football team. The following year, we played. We were again nationally recognized, and the following year, too. And the year after I graduated, my team was number one in the nation and deserved and expected an invitation to the Rose Bowl. So my teammates had other ideas. They went down to the coach and then to the president of the university and said, "We have worked hard, we have practiced hard, we've played hard, we're pleased with what we have done, but we're getting behind in our studies. It's time for us to go back to the classes. Please do not accept an invitation to the Rose Bowl." And Bob thought for a minute, said, "How often would you hear something like that today?" But so the team did not go back. But those were Bob's thoughts. Those were some of Bob's principles. He had his principles, and he had his ideas, and he was firm in them throughout his life with good common sense. And when I say that he came here with a legal education, that brought a dimension here to Juneau and to Alaska that heretofore had not been here, sort of a sense of jurisprudence and something that you really can't get reading the law, or very difficult to get reading the law. Bob did me a great favor. In 1977, he hired a law clerk out of my old state of Connecticut to come up here and be his clerk for a year. That clerk never went back. We were married in 1979, and I've had the most wonderful wife for the last 33 years. We've tried to repay him somewhat, and I can remember one instance where we did. Kathy and I and Barb and Ann got together around the 4th of July. Connie, their mother, was not doing well. It was not clear whether she was going to be with us much longer. So I had organized the marching band in 76, and I still had something to say about what they were going to do. But I went to them and I said, Connie Boutchever's got her birthday this 4th. Let's serenade her on the way. And they were elated. Most of them knew Connie, and those that didn't certainly knew of her. So on the appointed day, Ann and Barbara had the whole Boutchever family out there right on the street. We marched down, drum major stopped to the parade in a right face, and we played Happy Birthday to Connie. Bob was on her left, and he was smiling and happy, and all the daughters were over on the other side, and they were very happy. But Connie was looking out at me as though she were going to say, and you know, she was an old director of stage and production, as though she was going to say, this is not in the script. And just about then, Bob said something to her, and it dawned on her that it was her birthday, and we were celebrating her. And she turned and put her face into Bob's shoulder. So I'd like to say thank you, Bob. He has done an incredible amount for this city. I was very pleased to hear the story about him putting the boat on the flats over at Admiralty Creek. Those of us who have done that normally don't talk about it. And I join Bob in that same scenario. I would like to say just thank you, Bob. If I, you know, I could give you a good Latin phrase, requiescat in pacem, rest in peace. But Bob and Connie are together again. They're not resting. They're out doing something, and they're having fun. Thank you.
Before I call on Judge Boutchever's daughters, I was told that Av Gross was trying to make it to this event. Did he not make it? I'll say this, then, that Av Gross, the former partner of Justice Boutchever and the Faulkner Banfield firm, former attorney general, appointed by Jay Hammond, former bridge partner and adversary, could not be here, so I'll note that he provided the classic summary in today's program, quote, he was a good fly fisherman, a very lucky bridge player, a great lawyer, and one of the most decent men I ever knew. That's Av Gross, speaking of Judge Boutchever. And now, it's my pleasure to call upon first Barbara Boutchever Lynn.
Honorable Justice Fabe, Chief, all the justices of the Supreme Court, members of the Juneau and Alaska Bar Association, this is being a tremendous tribute. I can't thank all of you enough. Every one of you have had so many wonderful, wonderful things to say. On behalf of the Boutchevers, I thank all of you. We can't thank you enough. Our father would have been at first very surprised at this. I think he felt that once he left Alaska that most of the work that he had done in Alaska was in the past. He also would have been extremely humbled by this and proud. So thank you. I have to make a couple of other comments too before I begin this talk. One is, you are not the only one that had the wonderful fishing experience with my dad. I think every law clerk that came to town with him, I remember my mother calling the Coast Guard out when I went with him because he was late for a bridge game. So the history goes on. It's quite amazing that my parents ever came to Alaska. Right after World War II, my father had never been west of the Hudson River. My mother grew up in Lower Lake Michigan. And then an opportunity came to come to Alaska. My father couldn't resist. He managed to talk our mother into coming for 1 year. When he arrived in Juneau in 1946, it was a very small community of under 7,000 people. Everybody knew everybody. or at least it seemed, and almost everyone lived in downtown Juneau. In 1947, my father joined the law firm of Faulkner, Banfield, and then Boutchiever. At that time, there were actually two large law firms in Juneau. Each had three attorneys. One was my dad's, and the chief attorney was Mr. Faulkner. The other was Robertson, Monagle, and Eastaugh. The chief attorney was Mr. Robertson. In this famous book that everyone mentions, where Dad did an oral history with Tom Stewart, he recollects his first assignment was to accompany Mr. Faulkner to a court case where Mr. Robertson was the leading attorney for the opposing side. Mr. Faulkner began to cross-examine a witness for Mr. Robertson's side, and he was trying to discredit her by getting her to admit to several counts of indictment for drunkenness and disorderly conduct. When he finally got through all six of these indictments, which she admitted to, she finally looked at him and she said, "But Mr. Faulkner, it's all your fault." And as my dad said, Mr. Faulkner was so stunned, he did what an attorney should never do. He asked her, "Why would you say that?" And she replied, "Well, I used to help your wife, Mrs. Faulkner, at the many parties that she gave. It was there I had my first taste of wine, and that set me on my path to drunkenness." At the end of the day, my dad and Mr. Faulkner got in the elevator, and this same witness happened to be there. Mr. Faulkner looked at her, and he said, "You know, I don't recognize you as someone who worked in our home." And she looked at him. "Oh, I was mistaken. It was Mr. Robertson's wife I worked for." One of the things about growing up in Juneau was, as been stated, that our dad had a very busy law profession. He also was on a lot of committees and very involved in civic affairs. But my three sisters and I really never knew that. He was always there for us. He took the time to teach us all the things that he loved: nature, sports, music, and literature. And particularly as I think about my dad and I think about the influence he had on me, one of the most remarkable things was that he took us, we were girls, and he took us and taught us to fly fish, to camp, to hike, how to identify birds. At the time we were growing up, there was no Title IX. In Juneau, the only sport that a girl could participate in was skiing. There was nothing else. And I remember going down to the Evergreen Bowl with my dad. It's now called Cope Park. He would teach us how to play tennis, and it was painstaking for me. I had to turn sideways, get my forearm just so. And finally, I graduated to the tennis court. Once on the court, I had to be ready, dance on my toes, none of this flat-footed standing. And I had to be ready so that I could hold the racket a certain way and pivot in either direction to respond appropriately. I don't play tennis anymore, but I know if I were in that serve-ready stance, I would be most formidable to anyone trying to serve to me. One of the things that I think my dad really had to exhibit in our family was, when I look back, he exhibited extreme patience and optimism. And by extreme patience, you had to have extreme patience to live in a family with four daughters of very strong personalities, a very energetic wife who had very strongly held opinions, and a dramatic flair. One of the other things that stands out in my memory of my father was he loved to write. A lot has been said about how well his opinions were written. But at a very early age, he started writing fiction. And I know he even submitted a story to Outdoor Life. I'm not sure if it ever got published. But one of the things I remember about him, he would tell us these stories at night and embellish them so we'd have chapter after chapter, which we eagerly awaited. He also wrote many odes, and many recollect these odes were always for great family occasions or his many fishing and fishing and camping adventures. All of them, as I looked at them, his glass was always more than half full. He always found the silver lining in all of his experiences. And as I also reflect back on all the great things about my dad, we are so thankful for the tremendous legacy he left my three sisters and I, our children, and those to follow. We miss him greatly, but we're sustained by the memories of a man who had a long life and spent a lot of time with us. And in just ending on a little more serious note, I'd like to read a little excerpt from Ode to Imitations of Immortality by William Wordsworth. This selection was what my father read at his mother's service, at his beloved brother's service, and at my mother's service. The rainbow comes and goes, and lovely is the rose. The moon doth with delight look around her when the heavens are bare. Waters on a starry night are beautiful and fair. The sunshine is a glorious birth, but yet I know where'er I go, that there have passed away a glory from the earth.
Thank you, Barb. And now I'd like to call upon Barb's sister, Linda Buchiever-Schwartz.
Thank you. Barbara, you had to read that right before me, and I'm a little teary. Thank you, Justices. Thank you, everybody, for attending. I know Barbara already did this, but, you know, it is just really wonderful to be Bob Buchiever's daughter and realize how blessed we've been all our lives to have him in our lives. I realized when I was thinking about him the other day that he is my longest relationship. I've known him for, well, over 60 years, so that was pretty amazing. You'll be happy to know, since I'm the last speaker, that I'm just going to add a coda to Barb's talk, as my musical sister Anne would put it. As the last speaker, I'm just going to tell a very short story and read a shorter poem. This story is a new one, although the events happened long ago. In March, our mother, Connie Buchiever, was honored for her lifetime work in Alaska in the arts, on behalf of the arts, and was inducted into the class of 2012 Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. And they held the ceremony in Anchorage, so my husband John and I were the Buchiever representatives to receive this award. And while I was there, just the most unexpected thing happened. I was sitting next to a woman, and I introduced myself as Linda Buchiever, and she said to me, "Oh, I was so sorry to hear of your father's death." And, you know, I thanked her, and then she said, "You know, he was my hero." And I said, "Oh, well, really?" And she said, "Yes. Way back when I was a young woman, and this was many years ago when Daddy was a practicing attorney. She was in a very bad relationship. She had four young children, and she wanted a divorce, and she was referred to our father. So when she met with him, she said, she told him, "I just need to get out of this. You know, I don't have much money. I just want to get this done because this is an abusive relationship, and I have four little kids." And he said, "Well, I'll take your case, but we're not going to do a fast, no-fault kind of divorce. We're going to make sure that you're taken care of and that your children are taken care of. And if you agree to that, I'll take the case." And so, of course, she did. And he did. And she was set up, and he achieved for her what was available under the law. And she received a fair settlement and was set up and was able to start her life anew. And this is what she told me. She said, "You know," and actually, I'll just say a little side thing. I'm not going to identify her, of course, but she went on to be quite a really amazing leader in the community of Juneau and the state. And she said to me, and he gave me his bill, and it was for $25. So, of course, you know, I'm all teary and falling apart at that one. But I think the reason that I love this story so much is what it tells about my father. I never heard that story. Nobody ever heard that story. It was just the way he lived his life. He would do things like that and never think anything of it because it was just the right thing to do. He was really a very modest and kind and compassionate person. Barbara talked about how Dad wrote poems and odes and things like that to commemorate events. And so we have taken that on in the Boochiever family. And I have taken on a lot of that and have written a lot of poems over the years. And 25 years ago, I wrote a poem for my father's 70th birthday. And we, my sisters and I, presented it to him with love and admiration, of course. And I'm going to read it to you, and keep in mind it was a 70th birthday celebration, but for me it kind of captures what we felt of him as our father and as a person. It's called The Legacy, and I ask you to forgive the amateurish meter here. Athlete, scholar, captain, lawyer, justice, judge, husband, and father. In all that you've done and all that you are, you've passed on a legacy to help us reach far. It's your passion for justice, compassion for weakness, your respect for all people of all colors and creeds. It's your reverence for nature, your words, and your deeds. It's your kindness, love, laughter, and wit, your interest in sports, in keeping fit. It's how you live your life fully one day at a time by stretching the limits of your heart and your mind. Today is your birthday, 70 years strong. We drink you a toast to a life full and long. And we thank you, dear Father, for your legacy of living, forever ours and our children's. It's a gift you keep giving.
Thank you, Linda. Just as we opened with music, we close with music. Scott Miller, Justice Boochiever's son-in-law, will now provide a musical tribute, his original composition, Run Free. Scott?
So this is listed in the program as a tribute to Bob, but it's not really. It's a song that we've kind of taken to singing at family gatherings over the last few years. And so these guys more or less know the chorus, and some of the family knows the chorus, so just kind of kick in on that. If I'd written any songs on fly fishing, I suppose I could call those a tribute to Bob. But this is kind of more about, well, what do we do now? This is sort of a song for us, really. No problem.
stars are all bright and the wind's blowing fair. Death steals all mothers and fathers. Before we can learn all they know, just as the children leave home when they're ready, parents have their time to go. They'll stand on the foredeck, weigh up the anchor, set all the sails flying, run free if they dare. World is an ocean of sorrow and trouble, but the stars are all bright.
And your accompanists. Thank you to everyone who's attended this memorial. You honor the memory of Justice Boutchever and his family by being here. Thank you to the organizers of this event, my colleague Justice Stowers, the Boutchever daughters, Barb Hood of the court system, and all the others who helped. And finally, thank you to the family of Justice Boutchever, his daughters, Barbara Lind, Linda Boutchever Schwartz, Ann Boutchever, and Mimi Medenica, his sons-in-laws, his 11 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, 3 stepdaughters, and their families, for sharing with all of us this remarkable man. And with that, court stands in recess. Thank you.